Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Sammy P of Fox Sports will join us. We will go over NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs. Sammy has some baseball bets, and I will do some baseball here in a minute. Yankees thoughts on John Sterling. But we'll start with the NBA as we have a pair of game twos here on a Wednesday with the Knicks absolutely on fire here, laying 7.5 to the 76ers, and the Spurs off a upset loss on Monday night where in game one, where they really came close to stealing that game. I had no business winning. We're down six with like 45 seconds left and had not only a three in the air, but a good three, a good look from three in the air to try to steal that game, but they couldn't. Minnesota, Edwards out of nowhere comes in and plays pretty well, scores 18 points. So a pair of game two. So I'll get my thoughts here on the NBA and we'll do some baseball. And just starting with the Knicks, look, I know the thing you're supposed to do is fade the hot team, and it's counterintuitive. And, you know, at some point you have to sell high. I'm not stepping in front of this Knicks team. I guess if I had to play it and lay it or take it, I guess I would lay the 7.5. But the every other day nature of this series now, and this is going to be every other day with the first round just in general going so long for most of these teams and a lot of 6 and 7 game series. Embiid just feels like he's not going to be able to hold up through the 7 games. He looked tired. He looked worn down. And the Knicks, and maybe it's prisoner of the moment, the Knicks are just not stepping in front of them, even though, you know, this is going to be a desperate Philly team catching points. And there's going to be a group of sharp people, a sharp angle to, hey, I'm going to take the points. I'm going to fade the hot team. Maybe that's the right side, but I'm not stepping in front of it. I guess, like I said, I guess it would be Philly or pass, but just too many concerns with the fatigue. Knicks are playing too well, and I think the Knicks are going to the finals. I really do. They had a shot last year. They had home court in the conference finals. They lost that ridiculous game one. They blew that game. They never should have lost. And then they lost game two at home too, and they could just never quite get back on track in the series. They won game three on the road, eventually lost in six to Indiana. 2 years ago, they were in good shape to win in the second round against Indiana. They were up 2-0 in that series, lost a game seven at home. The whole team got hurt. So it's like they've been taking little baby steps. Last year, they lose in the conference finals. The year before, they lose the second round. So each year, they keep going up around. I feel like this is the year it's set up here. And as we're speaking, Detroit and Cleveland are playing, I think, regardless. That's a long series, six, probably 7 games. I'd be surprised. I'm surprised, but I expect the Knicks to be in the finals here a month or so from now. I think they'll finish up Philly. Again, after these game ones, you don't want to be too much a prisoner of the moment. But I do think, you know, they will. I picked Knicks in six to start. I'm not going to jump off that, but I would not be surprised if they win game two, split in Philly, then wrap it up in five. I'll stick with Knicks in six, but I'm torn now between five or six, where at the beginning of the series, I was torn between Knicks in seven, and the Knicks are -425 series favorites. Philly +350, if you think. And look, long way to go. It's only one game. And Philly, I would think he's going to win games in the series. I would have concern about, again, them wearing down. But to me, the Knicks are going to the finals. I think they'll beat Philly. If it's Detroit, they're better than Detroit. If it's Cleveland, I think they're better than Cleveland, and they have home court. I think the Knicks are going to the finals. I don't think they stand much of a chance against whoever comes out of the West, the Thunder, the Spurs. I guess you got to throw Minnesota in that, but it'll still probably be the Thunder or the Spurs. I think the Thunder, and that would probably be a short series, but you know what? You deal with that when it gets here. Who knows? Maybe SGA turns an ankle. Maybe whatever happens. You haven't been there in a very long time. To get back there would mean a lot. To have the NBA Finals at Madison Square Garden here in June would mean a lot to the Knicks, would mean a lot to Knicks fans, and I do think we're going to get it. And if you're looking right now to try to bet accordingly, OKC to beat the Knicks in the finals, exact result, +250. I don't think that's the worst bet. I actually think that's what's going to happen because, you know, the more I watch the Spurs, they could have easily lost a couple of those games to Portland. I do think they'll probably bounce back in game two. You know, switching gears here in the West, I do think they'll bounce back in game two. We see this a lot. Team loses game one at home. Game two, they usually win and win convincingly. So I would expect that to be the case here in game two. I'd actually lay it with the Spurs before I took it. But hey, anytime the road team wins game one, you're either looking at an upset or be a long series, or see both. I don't think you're going to have a scenario here where the Spurs just run off four in a row. And I'm kicking myself because when that series opened up Friday morning, Denver upset Minnesota on that Thursday night. Minnesota upset Denver that Thursday night. You wake up Friday morning and you see the series spread, Spurs minus 2,000 in game one, Spurs are laying 14. I was shocked. And usually I got a pretty good feel for what these series prices are going to be. These game one spreads are going to be like I'm sure most people listening do. You have a sense of ballpark of what the series and game one price are going to be. I was shocked it was minus 2,000. I was shocked it was 14. But the more I looked at it, I just talked myself out of it. It's like, well, you know, Edwards is going to be out. DeSumo's out. I'll wait. I didn't do anything with it. And then by the time you thought about doing anything with it, it was possible that Edwards is going to play. Then eventually Edwards is ruled in. Then you don't want to take, you know, 8.5, 9 when you could add 13.5, 14. And then it just kind of let it go. So give credit. JVT was on it Sunday. And I did agree with the plus 220 was a great price on Minnesota plus 2.5 games. Essentially, hey, they're going to win two or more games in the series, and they're already halfway there with a bunch of chances to get one at home. Unless San Antonio wins the next four, which I don't think is going to happen, Minnesota's going to get a game six at home. So all they need is one out of the next four to get a game six at home. And if you get a game six at home, you got a shot to push it to seven. So you want to balance not being a prisoner of the moment and not overreacting to game one, but also reacting appropriately to game one. And I do think if I had a redo, it would somewhere between Spurs and six and Spurs and seven. I would not be shocked. I'd be a little bit surprised, but I would not be shocked if Minnesota won the series. I just wasn't expecting, and I know it's a 180 from what I was saying before the series, where I thought the Spurs would win a short series, but I didn't expect Edwards to play until the middle of the series. The fact that Edwards is back, and give them credit. That's a tough team, a gutty team. You know, Randall's not everyone's favorite player, but you know, he's a good postseason player. Finch is a tremendous coach, an underrated coach. Edwards made some mistakes allowing offensive rebounds late in that game, but you know, he's a dynamic player. They're just a good, deep, tough, well-run team. They pull upsets. They punch above their weight. They kind of play down to their competition during the regular season, but that's a gutty team. I don't expect them to win game two. If you do, well, you're looking at possibly a Wolves OKC conference final for the second year in a row and a third straight conference finals appearance for Minnesota. I'm not quite there yet, but like I said, San Antonio showed some flaws in the last round where they could have easily lost game three to Portland. They were down big late second half, or not late, but second half, you're down double digits. And then game four, down double digits that Sunday afternoon, a week and a half or so ago. They did rally in both games and they won, but you know, everyone loves Wembanyama. Wembanyama is a great player and going to be even a better player, going to be the best player in the league sooner rather than later. Everyone talking about the 12 blocks. First off, a bunch of them were goaltending. I saw Minnesota complaining after the game that, hey, give them credit, 12 blocks, but three or four of those were goaltending. I think they were right. A few of those were goaltending. And 0 of 8 from the floor. I mean, this guy's 10 feet tall. You should not be going 0 of 8 from 3. Not 0 of 8 from the floor, but 0 of 8 from 3. I mean, you should be able to basically, you know, get near the hoop and dunk every time. 0 of 8 from 3. I wouldn't expect that to continue, but Minnesota also left some points on the board in terms of missed free throw. So looking like a longer series than expected there. I would expect Minnesota to be up for the fight here. So as far as these game twos, it would be just a lean towards Philly. I actually like the Spurs minus the 9, 9.5. Don't love it. Don't love it. Don't love this matchup in terms of laying points, but it's just the trend. I talk about this at the start of every round. The trend is so strong. Anytime you've got the higher seed either down 3-1 and they need game five, or they lose game one and they got game two at home, very often they absolutely roll in game two. So I will back the trend here and lay it with the Spurs. Don't have a great feel for the other one in terms of the number, but like I said, I do think the Knicks are going to the finals. And OKC plus 250 to beat the Knicks in the finals. Exact result to me is a bet worth making. We'll get to Sammy P in a second. Just quickly on the baseball, a couple things. Skubal, the Tigers, great lefty, goes down with the injury Monday. He was supposed to pitch against Boston. He gets scratched. Crochet, who is the co-favorite for Cy Young. So both co-favorites in the American League hurt. Joe Ryan also hurt. AL Cy Young is wide open. He's now Cam Schlittler and Max Fried, two Yankees as short shots, which is appropriate because the Yankees right now, look, you can't make the World Series in May. You can't win it in May, but boy, the Yankees are a cut above pretty much everyone in the American League right now. And the only concern for them is injury over the long season and just the randomness of postseason baseball. But the Yankees right now are really, really good. But AL Cy Young is wide open. I wouldn't take the 2-1 with Schlittler or 3-1 with Fried. I know he gave up a few runs here watching the Yankees and the Rangers right now. DeGrom did get touched up a little bit, gave up a home run to McMahon of all people. And McMahon's actually spun the bat a little bit better for the Yankees recently, much better. And he's a tremendous glove, just not much of a hitter, but he's hit okay recently. DeGrom at 13-14-1, that would actually be the best bet just because his numbers are still really good. The velocity is still good. The strikeout walk numbers, everything. He's gotten hit a little bit harder than you might expect, but that is an award that's wide open. I want to take somebody that's double digits. I've heard people make the case, you know, Emerson Hancock at 75-1, Will Warren at 65-1. Hey, there's enough injuries where if you have a feeling on someone, you might as well take a shot. But to me, the best balance of getting value and actually having a shot to win, I like the DeGrom number around 14-1. I think there's some value there. And I think there'd be a sentiment too to give this guy another Cy Young. He was hurt for so long. He's overcome the injuries. If he's sitting there at the end of the year with, I know wins don't matter anymore, you know, 15 wins and a 2 ERA and all these other guys are hurt, I could certainly see DeGrom winning that award. And he's been a little bit, I want to say more durable because it's been a small sample, but he had all those injuries at the end of his Mets tenure and the beginning of his Rangers tenure. But since he got the surgery and came back the end of, 24, the start of 25 and through this year, he's been, fingers crossed, knock on wood, all that stuff, he's been pretty healthy. So DeGrom, I think there's some value there. But like I said, Yankees playing extremely well, and I really enjoyed it. I thought everyone did a good job. Major League Baseball, Yes Network, I thought everyone did a really good job with the John Sterling, the Yankees legendary radio announcer, passing away Monday morning. Everyone did a really good job with the tributes. And, man, it's weird to say an 87-year-old passing away is shocking because he's 87. He turned 88. I know he's born on 4th of July. So a few months away from his 88th birthday. Anytime somebody that old passes away, you can't say it's shocking. It just felt like it was shocking. It just felt like he was going to live forever because he worked forever. He seemed ageless. You know, he retired a couple years ago, but came back for the playoffs, that great Soto team that lost in the World Series to the Dodgers. He was doing shows on FAN up until recently. I know he suffered a heart attack, but it just felt like he was going to live forever. So a tough loss there with Sterling, and just such a distinctive voice. And it was really fun to just go back and listen to all of the old calls. And it's amazing how many big calls he was around for, whether it was clinching the World Series, you know, final outs of clinching the World Series, big home runs, you know, walk-off home runs, bunch of Bernie Williams, burn, baby, burn. The two home runs against the Diamondbacks that didn't lead to a World Series title, but the ones that tied the game, Brocious and Tino on back-to-back nights. I can remember the Soriano homer in game 7 of that series where he started to, you know, he started to say, well, there are no more decisions left. You bring in Mariano, you're 6 outs away from a 4-peat, and obviously that 4-peat never came. But just so many iconic calls. The Giambi Grand Slam on the Friday night, Giambi's first year with the Yankees back in 2002. Man, he loses his mind on that one where he almost forget to do the Yankees win, and then he squeezes it in at the end. He goes, oh, by the way, and then he really gets into it. That was one where Giambi was really struggling, and that was a Friday night where I remember the game. It was delayed. It went until about 1 or 2 in the morning, 13, 14 innings. Giambi was hitting terribly, as guys that come over to New York with big contracts often did. And then he hits a grand slam, and Sterling loses his mind. So many calls throughout the years, up until a couple of Octobers ago. Soto, the 3-run homer against the Guardians to send the Yankees back to the World Series for the first time in 15 years. He was behind the mic for that. In a year, the Yankees obviously fell short in a World Series. They, you know, could have won, should have won, possibly. Should have at least gone much longer than 5 games, a series where they had their opportunities. And that was the last game he'd ever call, was that horrific game 5 where they're up 5-0 and they basically just forgot how to play baseball and still had another lead again in the 8th before they blew that and lost in game 5, a series where Cortez should have never been pitching in game 1 and the Yankees really let that get away. But just the voice is just so iconic and so distinctive that you hear him and you think of Yankee baseball. And baseball is like unlike the other sports because you don't listen to football on the radio for the most part. Nobody really listens to basketball on the radio. Baseball, there's so many games, you're in the car, you're wherever, it's not unusual that you hear a lot of, you know, your favorite baseball team on the radio, and he just had that distinctive voice. And for all of the, you know, theatric calls, and a lot of times towards the end of his career, he would botch the calls, and he'd say the ball was gone, it was off the wall, or vice versa. He really knew the game. He really knew the ins and outs of the game, the strategy of it. He was really just a good companion to watch the game along with, listen along with, and just a comforting voice. And people, you know, if you're of a certain age, you just, that's all you know, is you turn on the radio and John Sterling's doing the game, and he did every game for so many years, and people just have that attachment. It's a very personal attachment to a radio broadcaster because, you know, whether you're having a good day, a bad day, something big in your life happens, you turn on the game that day, and chances are John Sterling was calling that game, and obviously retired in 2024, came back for the playoffs, wasn't around last year, and now he's passed away. But just was cool to see all the tributes. You know, Kay did a good job with it, and it was pretty fitting. Judge hit the home run on Monday night, and it was just cool to go back and listen to all the iconic calls throughout the years, that the big homers, the big wins. And that's the other thing too with radio guys. You know, Michael Kay, the TV guys, they go away in the playoffs. It gives way to Fox. It gives way to whoever. In the radio, those guys call every game plus the playoffs, and Sterling was around for all those. So he will be missed, and was nice to see all the tributes and all the old calls that he had throughout the years. And it makes you miss when the Yankees are good. It makes you appreciate how special that era was. It really was such a special era where they were just in World Series, winning World Series, it seemed like every year, and Sterling was obviously there for all of it. But coming up next, let's talk some NBA, let's talk some NHL, and I think a little baseball with our buddy Sammy P. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, Should Have Bet More podcast. We are back. You can catch him, Fox Sports Chicken Dinner podcast. He joins us occasionally, and he joins us once again. It is Sammy P. Sammy, what's going on, man? Great time of the year. A lot of sports going on. How are you?
So much going on, and right on the heels of my annual Kentucky Derby donation, where I talk to experts that never win the big race. It's a fascinating case study, isn't it?
Yeah, it's look, it's fun to have skin in the game, but it's one where I know last year some people won, and you know, people hit the superfecta, things like that. But that's one where it's just, look, it's hard enough to bet on humans, but when you're betting on animals, it is even harder. But let's get to some human beings. We'll get to some hockey. We'll get to some baseball. We've got two game twos here on Wednesday. Obviously, the Knicks have been red hot. They dominate the Sixers in game one. They're laying 7.5. In game two, and then the Spurs in almost a must-win situation, laying 9.5 to the T-Wolves in game two. Do either of those trigger a bet for you?
Definitely. Philly plus 7.5 already got my money. Got that money on Tuesday morning when Jeff Sherman at the Westgate said, bet the Sixers. I'm like, all right, done. You're starting to see those Vegas books too drop through the 7 to 6.5. So when you see sharp books with air quotes around it, sharp books at 6.5 and rec books at 7.5, you know the drill. But it's a fascinating, you know, enigma, the way that people bet the NBA in the playoffs. People bet the Celtics in game seven, got pounded by the Sixers for the most part. Boston kind of caught up late, but then ran out of gas and couldn't shoot open threes. So all those people that bet Boston then bet Philly in game one, and Philly got torqued by the Knicks. So now those people are going to bet the Knicks in game number two. And I look, Embiid was sweating bullets in the first quarter in that game. I'm sure you watched it. I mean, he was just out of gas. You know, they didn't play their starters in the fourth quarter. So they wove the white flag on that game. And I don't think the Knicks can shoot that well from the field again. There is a market on series spread, 2.5 on Philly. I like it, but I don't like -140. So short answer, take the Sixers, and if you can get 7.5 still, by all means, rip it. The other series is interesting because I do like Minnesota, but it's difficult for me to sit here and say, oh, bet Minnesota to win the series right after they won game one.
Sure.
I think the Spurs even it, and then you could have an entry point going into game three. So assuming San Antonio wins game two as a near 10-point favorite, now we're 1-1, and that plus 160 on Minnesota goes to plus 275 or something like that, at which point that would be the point to come back in on Minnesota to win the series.
Would you take a shot on specific series score with Minnesota, figuring, you know what, if they're going to win, it's probably going to be a long series. If they win it at home in six, it's plus 550. If you think they can win a seventh game in San Antonio, look, they just won a game in San Antonio. You're getting 9-1, Minnesota in seven. Do either of those intrigue you?
I like 9-1. You could just erase what the bet is. I would consider 9-1. You're a Spurs guy, though, right? Don't you have all those Spurs tickets at good prices?
Yeah, but I mean, we know how that goes. It's funny. I'm kicking myself because the first number I saw Friday morning after the Timberwolves upset Denver Thursday night was Spurs minus 2,000 for the series and minus 14 game one. I was like, man, that is both of those. And I usually have a good feel, as you do too, probably. You kind of know what range these things are going to open in. I was shocked by that number. Then the more you look at it, it's probably that for a reason. All the injuries, Ant's probably not going to play. If he is going to play, it's not going to be later in the series. And then by the time I came around to actually betting it or taking 2.5 games at plus money with Minnesota, Ant was ruled in and the number had moved. So I just left it alone. But I mean, Minnesota has some real, I want to say advantages, but they're really well coached. Edwards is back. He looked healthy enough. To me, when the road team wins game one, you're probably looking at a longer series. And I think if nothing else right now, this is a longer series.
I think I would bet a little Minnesota in 7. The problem with that is that you really can't hedge it.
Right.
You really can't get out of that in game 7 because the Spurs will be a 8, 9, 10 point favorite at home. So you're sort of rogue on that as it is. I don't think I would do 6 or 7 because I'd hate myself if I bet 7 and they won in 6. I just think Edwards is going to get progressively healthier, knock on wood. In the NBA, I tend to look at teams that have sort of learned how to win by learning how to lose, and that's Minnesota. I mean, for the most part, aside from the Randall for Towns trade, this is a group that's been together for several years. They've made deep runs. Then you've got San Antonio. It's sort of like their first prom. So I think the move here is let the Spurs win game 2. And then as I was doing the math in my head, I'm like, if they're plus 160 now and they lose game 2, hell, they might be plus 350 to win the series, maybe even higher. Like, it's hard to do that math when you go from minus 2,000 to minus 180 after one game. You know, it's right. Very difficult to do that accordion math, but that would be what I would do. And then I do wanted to repeat, I do like Philly in game number 2.
Last one, NBA, before we move on, is Philly plus 350 enough for you to take a shot on that?
No. No, I think, a little behind the curtains here, we did just tape Bear Bets, and I think it was either you or Jeff that mentioned, how does Embiid stay healthy for the whole series? He took a shove at the top of the key the other day. I think it was Bridges got him on the screen, and he was already huffing wind, right? He was, and then he took that screen and hit the deck. He messed his knee up in game 7. If you told me he would be healthy for the whole series, for the whole duration, I'd consider it. I can't bet that.
I'm with you. Hockey. We got a couple games here on a Wednesday night. Buffalo-Montreal. It's a fun series. Buffalo laying $1.30, total 5.5. And then Vegas and Anaheim. Vegas a minus 160 favorite, total 6.5. Cy, total, either of those two games, anything you like?
Yeah, I'll be on Buffalo for sure in game number 1. I've been a Buffalo guy a lot this year, and maybe that's because I'm on Buffalo radio every Friday, and those guys have flipped me into a bandwagon Sabres fan. I just think top to bottom, 4 lines deep, the goalie's been very, very good. Alex Lyon, he was amazing in that Bruins series. But this Montreal team is very dangerous, that's for sure. Just knocked out Tampa Bay. I don't know how they won that game 7, shooting 9 pucks on net. Like, all right, you win a game 7 by achieving 9 shots on goal. That shouldn't happen. But I do like Buffalo. And then here's the bet. Let me cherry pick a little bit in the Conn Smythe market. I'm convinced Colorado, after watching Colorado the first few games of this postseason, I don't think that it's as wide open as many people were saying it was. Nathan MacKinnon to win the Conn Smythe, you can find it plus 450 or plus 475. I think the Avs are going to the Stanley Cup final, at which point I would guess MacKinnon would be, I don't know, plus 150 or plus 185 or something like that, somewhere in that 35-cent range. So I do like Buffalo in game number 1, and I'm just going to put all my eggs in the Nathan MacKinnon basket. Makar won the Conn Smythe last time. Usually the voters, I dealt with this in Chicago, they spread it around. Blackhawks won 3 cups, had 3 different Conn Smythe winners. Makar won the first one. It's McKinnon's time if Colorado goes all the way.
How about Carolina, Philly? Philly up 2-0 in game number 2, had a chance to even the series. It seems like Carolina is much better. You don't have to be a hockey expert to, you know, realize Carolina's the better team. Any interest in the dog here? Are you laying it? You staying away here? Total 5.5. Carolina laying $1.65.
Yeah, these Carolina games have been so low and slow. I mean, it just feels like every game goes under. And now you look at the board and it's 5.5 under minus 135 and 5.5 under minus 140. So the odds makers have basically said, we dare you. Come on, you want to bet the under? We'll tack a minus 140 on it. You know, contrarian-wise, I'd probably look to go over, but this could very easily be a sweep. Philly beat up a very old and tired and spent Pittsburgh team in the first round. And even in that round, Pittsburgh clawed all the way back to make it sort of a fight. Not much there. I think I would look at maybe a price on Carolina to just broom them away. I don't have it in front of me, but Philly is a very different team when they play from behind. They're not one to erase many deficits. They got to play from ahead. And yet the last game, they were up 2-0. And that didn't matter. So, Carolina could just go in there. Now the pressure is on Philly. I think this Flyers team is dead team walking.
All right. Exact Stanley Cup result. Colorado beats Carolina's plus 425. That's the short shot. Carolina beats Colorado is 5-1. That's the second short shot. And then you get like Carolina in Vegas, Carolina, and, let's see, Carolina, Vegas, 12-1 and vice versa, 7-1. I don't know. Does any of that interest you? If I had to tell you right now, exact result, would you go with the short shot in Colorado over Carolina or vice versa? Or would you look elsewhere?
I think I go Colorado, Buffalo. What's that price?
Let's see, Colorado, Buffalo. Now with this market, you got to pick the winner here, but Buffalo to beat Colorado is 18-1.
Mm-mm, no, I went
Colorado
the other way.
To beat Buffalo plus 850.
Yeah, that's more like it. Given what I just told you about McKinnon, I mean, you watch them the other night. Granted, it's just one game, but they scored 9 points or 9 goals in a Stanley Cup playoff game. You're like, holy cow. But they could win every way. I also think that game was a little bit of an aberration, obviously. You get 15 goals in a hockey game. That's not going to happen every night. But I think it's Colorado for sure. And then, yeah, let me go Buffalo. Let me knock out one of the favorites and not be boring. Everybody can come on this podcast and say, I like the favorite to beat the favorite. Let's go Colorado over Buffalo. Buffalo is due, man. This is their first postseason in like 15 years. They need it.
I was going to say, we can get a little creative here and parlay that with the short shot in the NBA is OKC to beat the Knicks in the finals, which is plus 250. But for some reason, DraftKings doesn't let you combine that. Why would you not let me combine that? First off, it's probably going to lose. There's no correlation. I don't know why you wouldn't let me parlay. That'd be a fun one, the plus 850 with the plus 250. But I guess they don't like fun. They're probably saving some money.
Can I give you a 230-1 parlay? Is that cool?
Please.
White Sox to make the playoffs. OKC to win the title, Colorado to win the title in hockey, Scottie Scheffler to win the PGA. I bet 50 to win 13,000.
That works. So what is it? So Scheffler PGA, OKC, Colorado, and the White Sox to make the playoffs. That would be good. That's a perfect segue because you like the White Sox. We were just talking about that on Bear Bets. Look, I can't argue. To me, the AL is wide open. The Yankees are in a class of their own in the American League, much better than I thought they'd be. I got to give them credit for that. But so you like the White Sox. What is it you like about this team?
Well, their pitching has been outstanding. I have the stat right here. Since April 3rd, the White Sox rotation leads the majors in ERA, 2.86. If I gave people 5 guesses, they wouldn't guess Chicago. No way. They go, oh, the Cubs. That's the White Sox. And they're only going to get better. They were going to bring up Hagen Smith, their lefty, who pitched at Arkansas, former first-round pick. Kyle Teal hasn't played a single game yet. He got hurt in the World Baseball Classic. They're going to bring up one of their top prospects, Braden Montgomery. Murakami's been unbelievable. He's neck and neck with Judge right now for the home run crown. They're starting to play good baseball. And I think Venable reminds me a lot of Dave Roberts when he first took over. He just kind of pushed all the right buttons, always knew when to pull the starters out, knew when to push the starters, picked the right relievers. I hate to compare, Venable directly to Roberts, but there's a lot to like there. He definitely knows the game and knows what he's doing. But really, it's look at all these teams that are just underachieving. Seattle, Texas, Toronto, Baltimore, Boston, Houston. These were all supposed to be, contenders for a playoff spot. And they're all behind the Sox in the standings. White Sox had that first week where they were really bad. And since then, the pitching's been very good. The defense has been a lot better. But mostly it's the division that blows. It's just not good. And with Scooble out for, 2-3 months now, I don't believe in the Guardians. I don't believe in the Royals. White Sox are going to start calling up some of these younger guys that could make an impact. And again, I'm not saying win the division, win the pennant, win the World Series. They're 12-1 to make the playoffs. They're 7-1 at DraftKings, or they're 12-1 at DraftKings and 7-1 at FanDuel. Okay? Same bet. $5 gap. So I think they have enough. I think they can make it interesting down the stretch. And they're certainly not selling like in years past. I mean, the last 3 or 4 years, anybody good got dealt at the deadline. This team's not going to add, but they're going to add from within. They're going to promote from double and triple A. So I think at 12-1 to make the playoffs, on top of my over 66.5 bet, I think they're going to the playoffs this year.
I need to consider an emotional hedge because I looked at them when they were 50-1 to win the division. I'm with you. I was high on this team for all the reasons you mentioned. You know, and last year they outperformed their record with the, you know, the runs scored versus runs allowed, all of that stuff. And then I passed on it and then it got down to like 20-25 to 1. And I was like, ah, for whatever reason, you know how you come across these bets and sometimes you think about them, sometimes you make them, sometimes you don't. But maybe I'll just make a little bit of a hedge there to make the playoffs or some kind of bet. Last one. AL Cy Young, there's an opening now. Crochet, Skubal, not in the mix. The two favorites before the year. I can't bet Schlittler or Freed, the two Yankee guys, at 2-3 to 1. Do you have anyone you would consider right now for Cy Young?
I like yours, actually, more than the one that Bear gave me. Bear was talking about Emerson Hancock. Great name, by the way. 100-1 at Caesars. They let me bet $50. Yay. So exciting. Although that's not going to win, so it's probably nice that I got the limit there. They threw the governor right there. They're just like, nope, you're not going to get more than $50. So then I bet that parlay that I told you about. I bet the other 50 of that 100 on that 230-1 parlay that won't win either. Yours is better. I think yours is obviously much more realistic, and they're sort of what's the term when an actor has had 10, 15 good years, and then they just give him the Oscar, like a legacy
lifetime
award.
Achievement.
Sure. That's the Grom in the AL, is it not?
I think it's very possible. Obviously, health dependent with all this stuff, but the strikeout numbers, the walk numbers, the ERA, all that stuff is there. If he can be healthy and just have, you know, the 2-2 ERA, and I know he's only got a couple wins. Wins don't really matter for this award as much as they used to. You like to have them still. You don't want to, you know, don't expect to win this thing with like 8 or 9 wins. But DeGrom, you know, can he get to 14 wins, a 2-2 ERA? These other guys get hurt. I certainly think it's possible. And at 13-1, I do think it's worth a bet.
You think the Yankees are going all the way to the World Series?
It's so hard just because it's still a couple days into May. And, you know, as great as Fried and Schiller have been, you know, you have a bad day in October, that erases all of that, and it's just so random when you get in the playoffs, but they're clearly the favorite. And I would have a hard time, you know, picking anybody over them right now. But again, long season, you need to keep all those guys healthy, you need to keep Judge healthy, but there is a gap between them and the second-best team in the American League, whoever you think it's going to be. I thought Baltimore would be good. They're not. You know, Seattle's been disappointing. Houston's not that team anymore. Boston, you go down the line, they are the clear-cut favorite in the American League.
That's one of our buddy Dave Sherapin's favorite games. Let's just pick the World Series in May or June. Give me the AL team. Give me the NL team. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to look at anybody outside of the Yankees. In the NL, I could give you a couple. I could give you the Braves. I could give you the Cubs, maybe the Padres. My list probably stops there after the Dodgers, of course. But Dave used to always try and shoot that long shot. It's just, it's difficult now. And I'll tell you another thing, too.
2-1, though, just quickly. You're going to bet 2-1 here on May 5th for something that's not going to cash until end of October. So much can go wrong. Two to ones to me, even though they're the favorite. I don't know. Is that a great bet? I don't love that number.
That's just the exact matchup, Yankees and Dodgers?
No, that's to win the American League. Yankees right now at DraftKings plus 210.
Oh, right. I will say this, though. I've probably heard this 7 years in a row, and I've never really tailed, but I've been a part of these conversations. I know guys that have bet the under on Tampa like 7 straight years, man. Every year. They're not good enough. The pitching isn't there. They don't have any superstars. And what are they, a game and a half behind the Yankees again? Like, that team defies not only logic, but math and gravity. Every year, you got guys shorting that team. What was their win total? 78.5? And they're on pace for like mid-80s. Again, every year, these guys short the Rays, and every year the Rays figure it out.
It's like one of those cooking shows where you just get a couple of random ingredients and you have to come up with like a, you know, a five course meal. The Rays just do more with less all the time. They are really, really well run. All right. Thanks to Sammy P. Rate, review, subscribe. We will be back on Friday. See you then.